The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.
George Haruza's family was able to escape the Holocaust and a communist dictatorship. And since coming to Missouri, Haruza has been able to establish himself as a successful dermatologist. But can Haruza's compelling personal backstory catapult him to the Missouri State Senate? The St. Louis County Republican joins us to make the case on why he should represent the 24th District on another edition of Politically Speaking. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
We have to talk about things that matter to people.
I've tried to bring that same aggressive, iconoclast style with me to the United States Senate.
I think my district is a model for the state.
We put Missourians first.
You just kind of have to find the common ground with people.
I believe that this district deserves someone who represents their values.
After I came back to St. Louis, I started thinking that I could have a bigger role on the change that I wanted to make.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum. Sarah Kellogg is deeply immersed in the special session this week, so I am flying solo with our guest today. He is the Republican nominee in Missouri's 24th senatorial district.
George Haruza.
Thank you so much for joining us today. So who are you and why does Missouri politics interest enough is interesting enough for you to run for the Missouri Senate?
Well, I'm Dr. George Haruza, and my story really starts all the way back to Second World War. I'm a son of a Holocaust survivor. My mother survived the Holocaust. Her family, both parents and all four grandparents, were killed in Auschwitz. She survived. She was liberated by Patton 71st Infantry May 4th, 1945. So without the Americans, soldiers' bravery and compassion, I wouldn't be here. So I have a great sense of gratitude to the United States. I grew up in communist Czechoslovakia, and ultimately we escaped from there to come to the United States. And both my parents, and we initially arrived with a suitcase and pretty much nothing else, living in a four-story walk-up studio apartment in the New York City. And ultimately, my parents became physicians. I became a physician. My sister became a physician. I became a dermatologist and ultimately president of the American Academy of Dermatology and Missouri State Medical Association, which wouldn't be possible in any other country in the world.
When did you decide that it was the right time for you to jump into this contest?
Well, I've not been comfortable with the direction we've been going. I grew up in that socialist system, which is a very tightly regulated world where everybody's equal but equally poor, except for the elites, as well as a world of indoctrination, censorship, terror. Now, I'm not saying that that is what's happening quite here, but some of the tendencies that that this country's been going in on both sides of the aisle, really the extremes, really has got me very worried about us heading in the wrong direction. The United States is the land of opportunity, and I've had that opportunity, and I want to really make sure that my kids, your kids, all of our future have that opportunity going forward.
Before redistricting, the 24th district was looking like a very safe district for Democrats. But now the new configuration, which essentially goes up and down I-270, is seen as a much more competitive district because it includes very Democratic cities like Maryland Heights and fairly Republican ones like Fenton. Did that provide you with a jump to get into the race, that this is a race that you could actually win?
We did. I filed for the race after we had the redistricting numbers, which do show, just as you mentioned, it's a very, North is very Democratic, South is very Republican, and the middle is a mixture. So the district is really very evenly balanced. And I think that's very good, because that actually helps us have a real discourse as far as on issues. Some of the districts in Missouri are very hard Republican or hard Democrat. You end up then having very extreme situations. So this district is really right in the middle.
So I remember when you filed, a lot of Republicans were very excited, and you were pretty much the consensus candidate to run against Representative McCreary. But you had a primary, and my understanding is you did not sleepwalk through this primary. How was that experience, considering that was basically your first election you've ever run in?
Well, I think having a primary challenger was a godsend. It really helped me and our team to really hone our skills and develop a really good approach. Also gave me an opportunity to meet with a lot of voters maybe earlier than I might have, and communicate with them and find out what they are interested in, because it's really ultimately it's about the voters, the residents of the district that I'm going to be representing.
There was a lot of conjecture that Representative Shamed Dogan lost his race for county executive because his first name is unusual. Your last name is Haruza. Did you feel like you needed to get out there and spend money and campaign so you didn't suffer the same fate as him?
Well, that's a very good point. My name being somewhat unusual, and my opponent's name is I call it a friendlier sounding name almost. So it was really important to make sure people know that that I am a regular person. I'm an okay person. I'm a common sense, pragmatic individual. The other thing that I thought was a bit unusual is that myself, my name Haruza is certainly not a Jewish name, yet I am Jewish, while my opponent's name, Schenck, is a Jewish-sounding name, yet he is not Jewish. The Jewish Light just had an article about that, how many people with Jewish names may not be Jewish.
Oh, that is a great point, and I want to tell you why, not to interrupt. My last name is Rosenbaum. I am Jewish. I have two sisters with the last name Rosenbaum. They are Lutheran. So you should not assume that just because you have a Jewish-sounding name that that person is Jewish.
I think that it comes exactly to my think in general is that I'm running on individual liberty, responsibility, and opportunity. And it's the stress on the individual, that we are all individuals in this country, and everybody has that opportunity as an individual, and you do not want to really label anyone based on some other extrinsic factors.
So I first met you when St. Louis County Republicans selected Mark Montavani to replace Catherine Pinner as their county executive candidate. Do you think the fact that Republicans have somebody who is going to be spending money and campaigning aggressively for that job could have a trickle-down effect on candidates like yourself?
Well, certainly having a serious candidate for the county executive race, I think will be helpful to my campaign, as it is for the Senate, U.S. Senate candidate, if you have a strong one, and for congressional district. When you're on the ballot, lower down on the ballot, who's up above you on the ballot is really important. But I think I plan to win the race on my own rights, not running on someone's coattails. So I'm going to be out there, and I am out there talking to the voters and really letting them getting to know me and realizing that I'm the right person for them to vote for.
What are some issues that people in the 24th district are telling you are important to them?
Well, as part of the part of running for office, of course, speaking to voters, and I've been now in all the different towns, the 12 towns in the district, talking to voters. And the number one issue that I get is the economy, especially inflation, and close behind on that is difficulty for small business owners that I talk to is finding people to work in their to work in their business. And I experience that. I take care of skin cancer patients, and I find that I cannot find enough staff to take care of all those patients. I had to cut my schedule back, not because of lack of patients, but because we just cannot get staff to come to work. So that's really the number one issue. The other issue, there's a lot of angst about education and about some aspects of education and what is being taught at schools, but also how schools are performing in terms of in general overall, not just for the individuals, because if we're fortunate in the district, we actually have some very good school districts. And public safety is really number three. Public safety, we had a significant uptick in property crime, primarily in my district. Often when you start with increased property crime, ultimately that will follow with some more serious crimes. And so I think it's really important for us to address public safety.
And now, you're not in Jefferson City right now, but as we're recording this, which is on September 15th, 2022 at 9:49:58, lawmakers are debating tax cuts and how to cut taxes. I think one of the ideas that the governor wants is to accelerate an existing tax cut so that people in Missouri would pay 4.8% instead, I think, 5.4 or 5.3%. Now, again, I know you're not in Jefferson City. You don't have the bill in front of you. But what do you think of the overall conceptual idea about cutting the income tax?
Well, I think taxes have one purpose is to generate revenue, but the other purpose is taxes also are used to incentivize behavior. If you reduce the marginal tax rate, which is what this legislation would do, that incentivizes behavior such as more entrepreneurship, more work. People will work a little bit more if they get to keep more of their own money that they have earned. So I'm a big believer in keeping the tax burden on Missourians as low as possible so that they can do they are better equipped to know what to do with their money.
One of the things that has been striking to me when doing some of the math, and I'm a journalist, so math is usually not my strong suit, is that the benefit of this particular tax cut really seems kind of underwhelming. My wife and I make a little over $100,000, and we would get about a $700 benefit from lowering the income tax, which is not no money, but that doesn't even pay for a month of daycare. It may pay for two or three trips to the grocery store. If you make less money than that, you're going to get even less than $700. So I think what Democrats are saying is that's just not worth it when it could put the state's long-term financial health at risk. What do you think about that?
Well, first off, I certainly trust that if they're going to doing the tax cut, that they're going to make sure that there is sufficient resources to do that. Certainly, the government now has the biggest budget surplus they've ever had. So I think they will, I'm sure, put also in measures in so that if the revenue isn't there, that the tax cuts as they graduated will not come through. Since state taxes tend to be a relatively small part of the overall tax burden, any tax cut is going to be relatively modest. It's really the aggregate benefit that I'm thinking of for the economy. And to have, for example, businesses and workers having a little bit more, well, then they can support their local business to purchase some more items that they have.
Well, you mentioned education, too. What would you like to see the state do in the realm of education?
Well, so education, we have real challenge with underperforming schools, especially in the city of St. Louis, Kansas City, and some of the suburbs, where it's considered adequate for accreditation if the school has a 20% reading level at grade level. 20% of students read at grade level, and some schools are accredited even if they are below that. And to me, that is totally unacceptable. We certainly have to make sure that there are enough resources, but we need to really work on the accountability about what happens with those resources so that they are deployed appropriately. the other part is parents really need to know what their kids are being taught at school and also have involvement, engagement. Ultimately, success of students is not just based on the school, but parental involvement is really crucial. So there was a Parents' Bill of Rights that was proposed last year, and it did not pass. I certainly would be supportive of that that type of legislation, as well as I am a proponent of having choice in education. My kids went to Ledoux, to MICDS, to Visitation, to San Gerard Magella, all very good schools, and we were able to do that. 90% of parents don't have that choice. They have to go to whatever school that their child is assigned to. So I do think that they should have the choice as well to go to school which works best for them, for their family, and for their student.
Well, let's drill down on both of those things a little bit more. So when you say that there should be more choice, there's currently like a tax credit program that allows for private entities more easily to do scholarships so people can go to private schools. Would you like to see that expanded? Would you want to see like direct state money going to vouchers so people could use that for choice? Like what would you actually want to see from a practical standpoint?
I will tell you one of those, my thing would be all of the above. So you'd have possibilities, as you mentioned, scholarships. There's that foundation formula, which was fixed this year, where it had been that charter schools did not get equal balance to public schools. So that has been fixed. I would want to expand significantly the access for students to access charter schools beyond the very limited areas where they can do that.
And as far as the Parents' Bill of Rights, you're talking basically about making sure parents know about the curriculum, guest speakers, sort of what's going on in their school, correct?
Correct. The Parents' Bill of Rights just makes sure that parents know, it's really transparency, so that parents know what is going on, and then they can make the choice if they feel that some things may or may not be appropriate for their children to be exposed to.
I think that one, you probably listened to the episode with Representative McCreary. What she's saying is that voters are not huge fans of the state government providing like a top-down micromanaging approach to school districts. Are you hearing sort of the same thing when you're going door to door?
Well, I'm myself, I would, I agree that in general, the government should be devolved to the lowest level so that school decisions should be made at the local level as much as possible. The state government should get only involved when there are real problems there. So, for example, I would think the state government should be involved in what's happening in the city of St. Louis, where the schools are underperforming, because the state government does have a responsibility to make sure that the kids there get a good quality education. So if the local government entities are not able to do it, then the state government should come in. But I do agree with Representative McCreary that whenever possible, decisions should be made locally.
Yeah, because I think the concept of a parent's bill of rights that simply provides like information to parents, while I'm sure that there's some pushback against that, I would not say it's as controversial as saying, well, you can't teach certain diversity curriculum in schools, which I know is kind of like colloquially called the critical race theory issue. But a lot of lawmakers want to go well beyond specifically critical race theory and ban any sort of diversity curriculum. Based off that answer you gave, I'm guessing you're less comfortable with things like that on a state level.
So I don't believe the state should be mandating very specific items of curriculum that is ultimately for the school boards to decide, but I do think parents should know what is being taught, and they should certainly have the option to opt out if they feel, you mentioned critical race theory, if they feel uncomfortable or they really feel, I feel that schools should be teaching students how to think and not what to think. And that is where I feel that it's really those kinds of what I call social engineering issues ideally should be really discussed mostly at home.
Yeah, and I think what a lot of people would say is I don't think critical race theory specifically is being taught in high schools or lower than that, because I think it's a college-level law school course. But there could be, again, what I'm broadly calling diversity curriculum that people may object to.
Right. And as I said, you know, to me, I think the key thing here is transparency. Just parents should know what it is, what's being taught, and then they can make the decision.
We'll be right back after this quick break with Republican George Haruza.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
And we're back on Politically Speaking with Dr. George Haruza. He is the Republican nominee in the 24th District Senate race. So I think that one issue that is top of mind of some voters is the fact that Roe versus Wade has been overturned, which meant that abortion is illegal in Missouri except for medical emergencies. Now, again, you're coming into this as a person who did not vote on that bill and has really no voting record. But I'm sure that a lot of people in this district want to know what your position on abortion rights are and if you're comfortable with the status quo in Missouri, which is you cannot get an abortion here except if it's a medical emergency.
So that is an issue that is very personal for many people. I, for one, have a special needs son, and to me, the thought of him having been aborted for convenience and not be here with us would be heartrending. And I know that he himself finds joy and fulfillment in his life, in spite of it being quite limited. The debate that's out there is, well, where, at what point, to me, the state involvement is, at what point does the baby gain rights while in the womb? Some people feel there are no such things, and the abortion all the way to delivery is reasonable, and others feel it happens at point of conception. So that is a debate that certainly is ongoing, and lots of ethicists get involved. And that is what I think we may be discussing in the legislature, and possibly I think the voters may at some point weigh in on it. My feeling on the law is that in Missouri, the law is too restrictive. I'm a physician. I've taken care of women and believe in supporting women's health, and I've also taken care of babies and children. Even though I'm a dermatologist, we do see patients with those as well. So I think that we do need to look at having exceptions for mother's health, not just a medical emergency, but mother's health. Rape and incest should be allowed. The other aspect to this, which I think we can more agree on, this issue is very divisive and very emotional. And I think I'm going to try to come up with pragmatic comments and solutions that we can most of us can agree on, and certainly representing my district.
Yeah, because right now it's zero unless it's medical emergencies. Would you be more comfortable if it was, I think that there's a 15-week ban that's being floated nationally. I think that's the situation in Florida. Would you be comfortable with something like that?
Well, I think that's where the debate is. It's where is that fine point? And I'm really not fully wedded to any specific week. You know, I think our bill actually in Missouri has the bill in Missouri, the legislation in Missouri, I think has the heartbeat bill, really, so called. So that's about 8 weeks. 15 weeks is when the baby can sense pain. Then you get to 23 weeks is when it can be viable.
And just to be clear for our listeners, it was 8 weeks unless Roe versus Wade was overturned. Again, it's 0 weeks because Roe versus Wade was overturned. Had it not been overturned, it would have been 8 weeks. That's basically what you're saying.
Well, thank you for clarifying that, because since I wasn't in the legislature,
exactly.
I might not know every detail.
I just want to make sure our listeners are clear what you're talking about. But continue.
But so to me, that decision, I don't really have a firm number. What I'm interested in is hearing from the voters, and I'm talking to the voters in the district. Even though it doesn't come up very often, we do discuss it, and my thought on that will really be informed by some of that aspect. The other thing that I do want to stress is that the areas we can agree on is, to me, abortion for convenience. I think it would be much better to have robust, easy access to birth control so that there is no need for, that there would be no need for abortion, and also for a woman that chooses to carry to term and is not ready to have a child, to make it very easy to adopt. And finally, that we have this limited postpartum care that's available in Medicare, and I would support expanding that to 12 months from the current 60 days.
There's some conjecture that this issue is going to energize supporters of abortion rights and make it harder for people like you, who are Republicans, to win races. Are you seeing that dynamic when you're campaigning for this job?
So I've been meeting voters for a number of a couple of months now, maybe 3 months now, and abortion, I can probably count on one hand the number of times abortion has come up as a significant issue. Because when I come to doors, I always ask voters, what's top of mind? What are the issues that matter? And it really comes up very rarely.
Now, you mentioned that another issue you're hearing is about public safety, and I saw on your website you're against, quote-unquote, defunding the police. What do you mean by that?
Well, over the last couple of years, there have been, especially certainly in 2020, we had lots of push and debates on the, primarily on the Democratic side, to push for reducing funding for police. And there are other laws that are also a problem has to do with no bail laws and no cash bail laws and such, as well as not having prosecutors really executing on their duty of actually enforcing the law. So the number of forces that have combined to really, in my opinion, leading to a significant increase in crime. So I don't think defunding or reducing funding for police is the answer. The other aspect is, so if you go to support the police, fully fund them, Kansas City tried to defund the police, and that's one setting where the state, for example, needed to step in to keep that from happening. It has not happened yet in St. Louis, so I think we are.
No, in fact, the opposite has happened in St. Louis, and you transitioned into my next question really well. There's been pretty substantial sales tax increases in St. Louis and St. Louis County, and I'm a St. Louis County voter. I don't think crime has noticeably gotten better since we have invested tens and tens of millions of dollars into public safety. I'm not arguing that, cutting police would be good, but isn't that an example of just pouring more money into law enforcement and public safety does not lead to less crime?
So it's a multifactorial. I mentioned the multifactorial issues that are involved. So you do have to fully fund the police, and you also have to make sure that the policing you execute is appropriate. But to me, fully funding police also means having enough police officers. So I'm a big subscriber to what I was in New York when Rudy Giuliani was mayor, and he was able to drastically reduce crime with Chief Bratton, because they had the broken windows policy. So that means policing where you really enforce the laws across the spectrum, because minor crimes, if they are not enforced or dealt with, then leads to more serious crimes. The other aspect of criminality has to do with that the vast majority of crimes are caused by very few individuals, and vast majority of those tend to be repeat offenders. So if you If you have someone commits a crime and they get a slap on the wrist and they're sent back out on the street to commit more crime, that does not improve the environment, and that is where the prosecutors come in and no bail laws. We don't have a no bail law in Missouri, which is great, but we do seem to have the prosecutors seem to abuse their discretion of enforcing crimes.
So I think that the reason why ideas like defund the police have come about is that there has been this nationwide focus about the relationship between police and African Americans, and this belief that this relationship has been frayed and broken for a long time. What would you want to do as a legislator to engender more trust between law enforcement and Black people?
Well, that's a great question. I had the opportunity to at the Back the Blue event last weekend, Ann Dorn, Captain Dorn's wife, who was killed during the looting and rioting in downtown St. Louis, defending a friend's shop. And I can tell you that on that side of the fence, and also the fact that the vast majority of violent crime is perpetrated on members of the African American community and other underrepresented groups, that they as a group are not in favor of reducing police. They want more police presence in their communities, because those are the ones that are the most hurt and affected by the crimes, by the criminals. So I don't think they as a group feel that way. There is in any profession, there are going to be bad apples. And so that's really important to root those out, because anytime you have those terrible incidents that happen like that, they then, of course, feed that narrative that somehow all police are bad. We have that happen in medicine too. A physician does something bad, well, it reduces trust in all physicians. So we do have to. I think the way to reduce that problem is, one is not to demonize the police in the media, because that is, again, because of one bad cop or two bad cops, you paint the other hundreds of thousands of cops that really do a good job. And my experience with police has been, in Czechoslovakia, they were there to terrorize the population. You wouldn't go to the police for help because they were there to keep you in line. Well, in the United States, I've experienced them as public servants. I think so training and also community policing, very important. The key thing is for the police to actually get out of their squad cars and walk the beat to really get the community to be comfortable with them.
And I think that one of the endemic issues, even in the 24th District, is this belief that some of the departments engage in racial profiling for traffic stops. There's a report that's done every year, but there's not really like anything that is done if it's found that a department engages in racial profiling. Is that something that should be looked at, that there should be some punitive penalties against departments that are not doing their jobs?
Certainly, if there is a racial profiling going on, that is totally unacceptable. I mean, I believe in a colorblind society in every aspect. So if there are issues where there is actually racial profiling, then that would be that's a big problem.
I have a couple more questions about the campaign. Why do you think that you would be a better senator for this district than Representative McCreary?
Well, so I've lived in the district for 29 years. My kids have gone to school in the district. So I know my district and what the and I'm also about what the voters and what the issues are, so I can bring that to represent them very effectively in Jefferson City. I'm not a career politician, which is really important. If I don't know if you follow the news about the dysfunction in Jefferson City and about things that are not getting done, I'm going there to get things done, and also don't have a personal agenda, because I've had a great career. I'm not looking to be a career politician. I'm going there to serve the citizens of my district. I've taken care of patients thousands of patients in the district over the years, and so I'm really want to be able to expand that to really impact help all of Missouri, especially in the area of healthcare, where I feel that my living in the real world, my experience in the real world, also being a businessman has helps me to know how you create jobs. What does it take to create jobs and keep a business going? And I think sometimes in Jeff City, just like in D.C., they forget what's happening at the ground level.
So your opponent released a TV ad that was pretty general recently, but it would not surprise me if the messaging against you is that you're just going to do whatever the, and I'm using this word in their words, not mine, crazy Republican extremists in Jefferson City, you're just going to do whatever they say. I want you to preemptively respond to that.
Well, I can tell you, I'm my own man. Because I am not a career politician, and I do have a separate life, to me, I'm going, and I don't owe anybody any favors. I'm going there to do what's right for the residents of Missouri. And you know, when people ask me, well, what kind of Republican are you? Because that does come up, and I do say I view myself as a Reagan Republican. And not only because of the fact that he liberated Czechoslovakia, even though that does, I credit him with liberating Czechoslovakia by having Soviet Union collapse. But to me, that kind of encompasses about where I am at, and I'm certainly not answerable to any party position, especially if it's all the way on the extremes. I'm a pragmatic, common sense individual.
So this is pretty much the only competitive state Senate race in the state, which means both parties are going to pay very close attention to it. And there could be a lot of money and manpower that goes into making sure this district is won by either side. How does this change this race for you?
Well, for me, it's actually very exciting because, you know, I've been president of five organizations, and the ones that I found the most satisfying is the ones where it was actually the most competitive race, because I've run those races. I know it's not public office, but it focuses you more so that I also make sure that I know what my district needs, voters really, really want and need from Jeff City, so I can bring it there. And to me, if it's a close race, it's a much more, it's a more robust, it's exciting, and so we're looking forward to it. Well, we're already in the middle of it, but we are certainly looking forward to it.
We are definitely in the thick of it. And as I mentioned before, if you want to listen to Dr. Haruza's opponent, State Representative Tracy McCurry on Politically Speaking, just go to stlpr.org, where you can find all of our political coverage. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri St. Louis. You can follow me on Twitter at Jay Rosenbaum. And how could people find out more about your campaign, either on the internet, through carrier pigeons? I'm trying to think of some other jokey communication dissemination device, but just how can people find out more about your campaign?
Well, it's haruzaformissouri.com. haruzaformissouri.com will take you to the website, and we also on Facebook with the same moniker.
Thank you very much, and until next time.